Welcome to HN Pod, your daily deep dive into the top stories and discussions from Hacker News. I am Sarah.
And I am Mike. Today is Thursday, August 20th, 2026, and we are covering all the biggest stories that hit the front page yesterday, August 19th. Welcome to episode 493.
We have a really fantastic lineup for you today, Mike. We are going to be talking about a new local-first alternative to Logitech software, a completely wild story about a joke domain purchase that accidentally got entangled in global military conflicts, OpenRouter getting acquired by Stripe, Graphene OS expanding to Motorola devices, and a new study on remote work well-being that sparked a massive debate in the comments.
Let us kick things off with yesterday's top story, which pulled in over 1,500 points. It is a project called OpenLogi. Basically, it is a local-first alternative to Logitech Options Plus, and it is written entirely in Rust.
If you own a Logitech MX Master mouse or one of their keyboards, you probably know the pain of their official software. It requires an account, it constantly phones home with telemetry, and it can be a massive resource hog on your machine. OpenLogi strips all of that away. It's just a native app that writes straight to a local configuration file on your computer. You can remap buttons, control your DPI, and adjust the Smart Shift scroll wheel without any cloud connection at all.
The comments on this one really highlighted why people are so desperate for this kind of tool. One user shared a story about a high-end Logitech webcam that flickered constantly. The fix was a simple 50Hz to 60Hz toggle, but they discovered that the toggle was only available if the software was set to English. Because they were using the Polish version of the app, the toggle was just missing entirely. They actually had to manually replace the Polish bundle with the English one through the binary just to fix their webcam.
That is wild, but it's so typical of modern hardware software. Another user mentioned having to write their own binary switcher just to make their keyboard function keys work properly on a Mac because the official software refused to support it. It speaks to a broader trend we see on Hacker News all the time. People buy physical hardware and they just want to control it locally. They don't want their mouse driver to be a cloud service or a subscription.
Totally. There was also an interesting meta discussion in the thread about the OpenLogi website itself. A few commenters complained that the landing page copy felt like it was generated by an AI and found it distracting, but others pushed back hard on that, pointing out that the site is incredibly functional. It gives you all the install commands right up front and clearly explains the architecture. One person pointed out that if an AI helped a developer, who might be working in Mandarin, communicate their open source project perfectly in English, why should anyone care?
Exactly. The code speaks for itself, and having a clean, hand-editable configuration file is exactly what power users want. I think we are going to see a lot more of these Rust-based local-first rewrites for peripheral drivers in the future.
Moving on to our second story. This one reads like a literal spy thriller. The post is titled, "A Joke Domain Purchase Turned into Geopolitical Warfare." It got nearly 800 points, and it is easily one of the craziest things I have read all week.
It really is. This is the story of SondHub. Back in 2018, the author bought the domain sondhub.org as a joke. It was just meant to redirect to a filter for tracking amateur weather balloons. But over the years, as the balloon tracking community grew, they built out a massive backend to track radio sondes, which are the little transmitters attached to meteorological weather balloons. They even built a reverse prediction system that uses wind models to calculate exactly where a balloon was launched from based on its flight path.
And that is where things take a massive turn. Because wind data is not just used for predicting the weather, it is heavily used by militaries to calculate artillery ranging. The author realized the reverse prediction system was accidentally mapping out active, highly classified military artillery sites and military vessels out in the ocean.
Right. They started getting emails from military installations asking very politely to be removed from their public maps. Then during the 2023 Chinese spy balloon incident, their server traffic absolutely exploded. Fast forward to 2024, and their API starts getting hammered by a single IP address. They track it down, and it turns out Ukrainian deep strike teams were allegedly using their open source wind forecasting engine to surf the sky and target areas.
The author was suddenly dealing with Amazon Web Services threatening to shut down the scraping IP. The author had to send support emails to AWS begging them not to block the account because, in their exact words, loss of life could occur if the system went down. They even got a data request from the US Office of the Secretary of War. On top of all that, they had air traffic controllers from the FAA contacting them, trying to redirect commercial flights away from standard weather balloons, completely not realizing that weather balloons are unguided and fall under standard aviation regulations.
The Hacker News comments were fascinated by the legal and ethical gray areas here. Some people wondered if the author should have pushed back more on the government request to hide launch sites, citing First Amendment rights and freedom of information. But as others pointed out, the author is Australian, not American, and playing nice with international militaries when you are just trying to run a hobbyist weather balloon tracker is probably the safest bet for your own sanity.
There was also a really fun tangent in the comments where people shared their own experiences launching amateur high-altitude balloons. One user talked about accidentally underinflating a balloon with party store helium, chasing it down in a truck in the middle of the night, and having to explain to a random farmer why they were wandering around his field in the dark looking for a science project. It is a great reminder of the weird, wonderful hobbyist roots that eventually led to this massive geopolitical drama.
Let us shift gears to some massive industry news. OpenRouter is joining Stripe. This post got 700 points. If you are not familiar with them, OpenRouter is essentially a unified API gateway for AI models. It routes your prompts to the cheapest or best model across hundreds of providers, like OpenAI, Anthropic, and Google. They are processing over 10 trillion tokens a day right now.
People have been calling OpenRouter the Stripe for LLMs for a while now, so this acquisition makes perfect sense. Stripe is buying them to basically power the financial infrastructure for the AI economy. As AI agents start doing more autonomous work, someone has to meter that activity, attribute the costs, and bill the customer. One commenter compared it to ADP for payroll, but for AI agents. Stripe clearly sees OpenRouter as the missing piece of that puzzle.
The community reaction was really interesting. A lot of users love OpenRouter because it prevents vendor lock-in. You just write your code to one API and you can swap models instantly without rewriting anything. Plus, they offer features like fallback routing, where if one provider goes down, your app automatically routes to another one.
But some commenters pointed out a looming challenge for OpenRouter. The original thesis of the company was that AI tokens were becoming a commodity, but lately, providers are adding non-commodity features that are hard to abstract. For example, Google is offering search grounding with Gemini, and OpenAI has real-time voice APIs. Those specialized features are much harder to put behind a single universal API.
That is a great point, Mike. Though another user noted that OpenRouter actually does support web search grounding now, which shows they're trying to keep up with the complexity. But as we move towards complex agent loops and managed virtual machines for AI, OpenRouter will have its work cut out for it. Still, with Stripe backing them, they have the resources and the fraud prevention expertise to build that out. It is a huge win for the OpenRouter team and a big signal for where the AI economy is heading.
Next up, a big update in the privacy phone space. The Graphene OS project announced that official support for devices beyond the Google Pixel should be available in 2027, starting with Motorola flagship foldables.
For years, if you wanted to run Graphene OS, which is widely considered the gold standard for a hardened, privacy-focused Android experience, you had to buy a Google Pixel. That always felt a bit ironic to some people, having to buy a Google phone to de-Google your life. But the Graphene OS developers have always explained that Pixels were the only phones on the market that actually met their strict hardware security requirements.
Exactly, and the post explains why 2027 is the magic year for Motorola to join the list. It all comes down to the system on a chip. The upcoming Snapdragon 8 Elite Gen 5 is the first Qualcomm chip to support hardware memory togging, or MTE. MTE is a massive security feature that helps prevent memory corruption bugs, which are the root cause of most zero-day exploits. Even the slightly lower-end chips coming out next year will not have it.
The comments were full of people asking when Graphene OS would come to cheaper, mid-range phones. A lot of users missed the days of the Moto G, where you could get a solid phone with expandable SD card storage for cheap, and they really want that with Graphene OS. One user mentioned having 800 gigabytes of music synced to an SD card and being loath to give that up.
By the way, that sparked a whole side conversation about music management workflows, with people bringing up tools like Beats for auto-tagging and Navidrome for playback, which is just peak hacker news. But getting back to the phones, the Graphene developers were in the thread explaining that the hardware security features they require, like MTE and modern secure elements, are currently only being built into the most expensive flagship chips.
It is a classic trickle-down technology problem. It will probably be a few more years before those security features make it to the budget phones. There was also some grumbling about the form factor. The first supported Motorola phones will be the Razr Fold and Flip. A lot of Hacker News readers just want a small, standard slab phone, like the old iPhone mini, but the market has largely abandoned that size. Still, having a non-pixel option for Graphene OS is a huge milestone for the open-source privacy community.
Our final story today is about a topic that always gets Hacker News talking, and that is remote work. A new study out of CU Boulder surveyed over 7,700 employees at a large healthcare organization and found that fully remote workers reported the highest levels of well-being, followed by hybrid workers, with fully on-site workers reporting the lowest well-being.
What's really interesting here is that it challenges the common executive argument that people need to be in the office to feel connected. In the survey, the remote workers were actually slightly more likely to use words associated with teamwork and support when describing their company culture than the on-site workers were. The researchers linked this to autonomy and flexibility. When you control your environment and eliminate the stress of a commute, your well-being goes up and employee turnover goes down.
But the Hacker News comments added a lot of nuance to this. One top commenter pointed out that in their experience, remote work well-being is highly bimodal. Some people absolutely thrive, while others slowly flame out from isolation and the lack of visual boundaries between work and home life.
Yeah, that comment resonated with a lot of people. It is really hard to predict who will succeed in a remote environment just from an interview. Another user brought up the impact of company culture on remote work. They argued that remote work is amazing when you have clear goals and a neutral political environment. But if a company is going through layoffs or management starts getting paranoid and using tracking software, that anxiety gets amplified over tools like Slack.
That is so true. They called it a prisoner's dilemma effect. In an office, you get subtle social cues. A quick nod in the hallway or a casual chat getting coffee can reassure you that your project is on track. Over Slack, a short one-word reply with no context can send you into a spiral of overthinking.
One commenter told an absolute horror story about being hired remotely to take over a project where everyone had quit. They ended up getting screamed at over their personal phone by a department head they had never even met because of budget issues they had nothing to do with. The client did not even know what the software was for.
That sounds like a complete nightmare. The general consensus in the thread seems to be that remote work is a massive quality of life upgrade for most engineers, but it requires a level of intentional communication, documentation, and management that a lot of companies are honestly still struggling to figure out.
Well, that is all we have time for today. From local first hardware drivers and weather balloon warfare to AI infrastructure, privacy phones, and the remote work debate, it was a packed day on Hacker News.
Thanks for joining us on HN Pod. If you want to read more about any of these stories or dive into the comments yourself, you can find all the links on the front page of Hacker News for August 19th, 2026.
We will be back tomorrow with more of the top stories and discussions. Have a great day, everyone.